Thank you and good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to be part of this panel. And as mentioned, I will be speaking about the unintended positive substance abuse outcomes from an HIV sexual risk reduction intervention for meth-using men who have sex with men. We looked specifically at outcomes that weren't expected regarding substance use, and alcohol use also was looked at. For disclosures, I have no personal, financial, commercial relationships to disclose. However, at the time this research was collected, I was an employee of UCSD and was the researcher responsible for collecting the data analyzed for this presentation. The brief intervention discussed today was developed due to the compounding effect of methamphetamine use contributing to transmission and acquisition of HIV among MSM. This intervention was developed based on proven intervention methods from recent studies, including EDGE and FastLane. Of note, historically, interventions targeting MSM have either looked at HIV positive or HIV negative men, targeted injecting or non-injecting drug users, focused on sexual risk behaviors or substance use behaviors, and were often intensive, involving multiple sessions and suffered from attrition. Often these interventions have also historically been delivered by highly trained or credentialed professionals, few of which are often found in community-based organizations accessing this population. The ARMU intervention that I'll be describing used a novel approach with a brief motivational interviewing design consisting of six sessions, four core sessions, and two needs-based modules, dependent upon a participant's HIV status and IDU risk factors. Content of these modules, the six modules, included contexting sexual risk behavior, IDU risk behavior, discussing disclosure, negotiation, support, and referrals. So those were the six themes for the modules that formed the intervention. The intervention was open to 80 participants and was designed to target, one, HIV positive and HIV negative men, targeted injecting and non-injecting meth users, address sexual behaviors as well as substance use issues, had a small number of sessions, of which half were delivered by telephone. The intention was to create an intervention that could be dovetailed within community-based organizations already reaching this population to add to their existing menu of services. And importantly, the intervention was designed to be delivered by providers without advanced degrees, such as myself with an MED or other practicing outreach workers, health counselors that do HIV counseling and testing, and social workers. The client-centered nature of MI design required rapport building and allowed for tailoring counseling sessions to an individual's self-identified needs, such as discussing behaviors, increasing awareness, defining associated risks, and finally addressing problem behaviors that the participant self-identified as wanting to change. This might include harm reduction skills for safer sex, safer injection techniques, and utilizing needle exchange programs and services, as well as accessing employment, housing, or other drug treatment services. For a little background about meth in San Diego, meth is the number one drug problem in San Diego. San Diego also shares an 80-mile border with Mexico. Much of the meth used in the area was previously produced in California. A lot of that production has crossed the border with tougher DEA enforcement in California, but there's plentiful supply. The drug is very inexpensive, extremely easy to access. Meth accounts for 40% of the drug mentions in emergency departments in San Diego, 42% of drug treatment admissions, and is found in blood specimens of 44% of adult male arrestees. Also, one-third of meth-using MSM inject drugs. Meth is a modern-day form of speed. It's much stronger than the earlier pharmaceutical versions produced and distributed largely in the 40s through the 70s. Today's meth may be about 100 times stronger than the original pharmacological version. Became popular among MSM largely during the 80s and after hours clubs, when clubs began extending hours, stopped serving alcohol at 2, but stayed open for dancing, kind of spawning the rave generation. Meth causes a euphoric feeling. Aphrodisia is a common effect. The experience isn't identical for everyone, but the large majority of men experience increased libido, confidence, sense of well-being, focus, become extremely horny. It does prevent some men from being able to perform, so it does have some side effects related to performance issues as well as very serious toxic side effects because the current version is often produced in garages and paint cans and uses some very nasty chemicals that both harm the users as well as the environment. Some of the physical harms that you may have heard about are meth mouth, where an individual's teeth and gums rot from smoking or ingesting meth. It can also be snorted, injected. There are many ways to use it. Some people insert small portions in their eyes. It can be administered a great many ways, booty bumps in the rectum. Meth has been linked to both acquisition and transmission of HIV among the meth-using population of men who have sex with men, including increased sexual activity, number of partners, marathon sex, and encounters with men who generally self-identify as heterosexual and only bi when high, an important population to other, a bridge population to other individuals. Also, although I'm presenting a lot of scientific numbers up here today, I would like to remind all of us that these numbers really reflect a significant amount of hardship and suffering borne by the individuals that experience these challenges, as well as those who care for them and those around them. It's a really enormous community that's affected by this drug use and the risk behaviors associated with it. The intervention study was a single-arm pre- and post-efficacy trial. Eligibility requirements included self-identified MSM who reported unprotected anal intercourse with a non-primary partner and methamphetamine use at least once during the prior 2 months. Participants were recruited through direct and indirect outreach through postcards and posters like this one. They received $145 for their time as a form of reimbursement. Participant risk behavior was assessed using ACASI surveys or audio computer assisted self-interviewing technology. Questionnaires were available on laptops that were prepared and secured to protect participants' identity and confidentiality. No names or identifying factors were included in the data collected on the laptops. The study was conducted between December 2007 and September 2009 in San Diego County, California. Bivariate analyses were conducted to compare participants' self-reported change in substance use as well as utilization of substance abuse treatment services during the 2 months before and the 2 months after the intervention. Of note, the motivational interviewing design uses social cognitive theory and theory of reasoned action. For those of you who may not be familiar with motivational interviewing, it's largely designed to motivate or enhance an individual's desire to change self-identified problem behavior. The intended findings or aims, objectives of the original study examined less non-primary partner unprotected anal intercourse, as well as harm reduction for injection drug use behaviors. Of the 80 participants enrolled, 74 completed baseline assessment as well as all intervention sessions. 68 or 85% completed baseline, all 6 sessions as well as the follow-up assessment. The intended outcomes of the study primarily addressed the self-reported reduced incidence of UAI with, again, non-primary partners and reduced IDU risks or reduced risks with sex partners known to be injection drug users. Findings from the study were expected to suggest that participation in the HIV sexual risk reduction intervention also influence sexual risk behaviors associated with both acquisition and transmission of HIV, hepatitis, STIs, and other bloodborne pathogens. Additionally, we anticipated unintended substance abuse outcomes after the study was well underway, and partially due to the qualitative experience I was having during the counseling sessions with participants. The next slide describes the participants in the population. The median age was 41. Participants were largely between the ages of 35 and 46. Nearly 90% had graduated high school, and surprisingly, less than 20% were employed. Study participants represented a broad racial assortment, and data from the study also indicated that many in the sample were marginally housed or homeless, were underemployed or unemployed, and of low socioeconomic status. All factors that could be expected in a population that also reported significant and chronic meth use, as much of our population did. Sexual risk outcomes were observed and expected with non-primary partners. However, sexual risk outcomes were also surprisingly significant with primary partners. Of these, the outcome with the lowest p-value was for the one in the lower left here for receptive UAI without drugs. Otherwise, all of the numbers were statistically significant. The first two columns there, the row with insertive is without drugs and with meth present, and the lower one is the what we consider the higher risk group engaging in receptive unprotected anal intercourse with drugs or with meth. Similarly, in addition to sexual risk outcomes, harm reduction outcomes for injection drug use behavior also demonstrated reduced needle sharing, syringe sharing, and other equipment such as cookers, and splitting drugs while they were wet. All of these were significantly reduced. Looking particularly at drug and alcohol use, we looked deeper into the unintended substance use outcomes of the study and observed significant reductions in alcohol use, injection drug use, and meth use after the intervention. Differences in reported injection drug use and meth use were most marked. A specifically encouraging data point is on the next slide, which shows the actual reduction in quantity of both alcohol and meth use. If you'll note, looking at meth use in grams, at baseline, participants reported 11.35 grams compared to 1.78 grams at follow-up. Also, binge use dropped dramatically as a result of findings from the follow-up. Numbers were 53% at baseline, 25% at follow-up, and the number of days spent in meth binges dropped from 2.76 to 0.87. Both of these also had p-values less than 0.001. When we conducted covariate analyses, it was revealed that the results were not confounded by HIV status, IDU status, socioeconomic factors, and many other factors. In light of this significant unintended reduction in substance use, we looked at participant use of external support services. Accessing external services was low at intake, as you can see from the slide. And though significant, was not substantially increased at final follow-up. However, utilization of substance abuse programs and services did have a statistically significant change of 44.6 versus 50% and a p-value of 0.001. Interestingly, accessing 12-step Crystal Meth Anonymous programs was significantly reduced after the follow-up. The numbers shifted from 41% at baseline to 25% at follow-up. The CMA, the abbreviation for Crystal Meth Anonymous, result may initially appear as a negative outcome. However, it is important to note that many of the study participants had previous exposure to recovery programs and qualitatively reported that they were disinclined to repeat such efforts. Nevertheless, the findings do demonstrate a significant reduction in substance use behavior, contrasted with less increased utilization of traditional recovery programs and services after the intervention. In conclusion, the study supported previous research examining the complex correlation between meth use and HIV risk behavior, with outcomes that, one, demonstrated decreased sex and drug use behavior after the intervention, two, changes to intervention policy may be warranted that incorporate both sex and drug use behavior into existing intervention programs. Three, when considering that this study population included a large number of heavy and chronic meth-using MSM who had previous exposure to recovery programs and services, the findings may suggest that the observed benefits are related to the support received as a result of the MI study intervention rather than referrals to utilization of traditional recovery services. While the study supported the efficacy of motivational interviewing as an intervention, there was no control arm for this study. Additional studies are needed to identify which component of the intervention actually influenced drug use. And finally, opportunities do exist for incorporating substance abuse recovery tools in existing HIV risk reduction interventions. There were a number of limitations also to this study, including self-reported data, a small sample size from San Diego County, the sensitive nature of illegal drug use and stigma associated with sexual risk behavior among MSM, also loss to follow-up due to incarceration, homelessness, as well as volunteer bias, and again, no control arm. The next step for such results would be to include testing the intervention in a randomized control trial to measure efficacy of the intervention, and reviewing public health policy implications for including substance abuse issues within existing HIV counseling and testing programs while utilizing non-advanced degree holding outreach workers and health counselors to increase service capacity. And for acknowledgments, this research wouldn't have been possible without my co-authors, Jasmine Cuevas, Dr. Tom Patterson, and the PI for the ARMU study, Richard Garfing, as well as the study participants who shared very personal stories with us. Also, Angie Ganham and Dr. Teresa Larson, and the UCSD antiviral research staff. Funding was provided by the CDC in a cooperative agreement. And my contact information has changed since I was with UCSD. It's now very simple, Mitch Metzner at AOL.com. Thank you very much.